Chapter 5. The Aeolian. The days trudged past. I worked in the fishery until my fingers were numb, then read in the archives until my eyes were blurry. On the fifth day of admissions, I finally finished my deck lamps and took them to stocks, hoping they sold quickly. I considered starting another pair, but I knew I wouldn't have time to finish them before tuition was due. So I set about making money in other ways. I played an extra night at Anchor's, earning free drinks and a handful of small change from appreciative audience members. I did some piecework in the fishery, making simple, useful items like brass gears and panes of twice-tough glass. Such things could be sold back to the workshop immediately for a tiny profit. Then, since tiny profits weren't going to be enough, I made two batches of yellow emitters. When used to make a sympathy lamp, their light was a pleasant yellow very close to sunlight. They were worth quite a bit of money, because doping them required dangerous materials. Heavy metals and vaporous acids were the least of them. The bizarre alchemical compounds were the truly frightening things. There were transporting agents that would move through your skin without leaving a mark, then quietly eat the calcium out of your bones. Others would simply lurk in your body doing nothing for months, until you started to bleed from your gums and lose your hair. The things they produced in Alchemy Complex made arsenic look like sugar in your tea. I was painstakingly careful, but while working on the second batch of emitters, my tenton glass cracked, and tiny drops of transporting agent spattered the glass of the fume hood where I was working. None of it actually touched my skin, but a single drop landed on my shirt, high above the long cuffs of the leather gloves I was wearing. Moving slowly, I used a nearby caliper to pinch the fabric of my shirt and pull it away from my body. Then, moving awkwardly, I cut the piece of fabric away so it had no chance at all of touching my skin. The incident left me shaken and sweating, and I decided there were better ways to earn money. I covered a fellow student's observation shift in the Medica in exchange for a jot and helped a merchant unload three wagon loads of lime for a halfpenny each. Then, later that night, I found a handful of cutthroat gamblers willing to let me sit in on their game of breath. Over the course of 2 hours, I managed to lose 18 pennies and some loose iron. Though it galled me, I forced myself to walk away from the table before things got any worse. At the end of all my scrambling, I had less in my purse than when I had begun. Luckily, I had one last trick up my sleeve. I stretched my legs on the wide stone road heading to Imre. Accompanying me were Simon and Willem. Will had ended up selling his late slot to a desperate scriv for a tidy profit, so both of them were finished with admissions and carefree as kittens. Will's tuition was set at 6 talents and 8, while Sim was still gloating over his impressively low 5 talents and 2. My purse held 1 talent and 3, an inauspicious number. Completing our quartet was Manet. His wild grey hair and habitually rumpled clothes made him look vaguely bewildered, as if he'd just woken up and couldn't quite remember where he was. We had brought him along partly because we needed a fourth for corners, but also because we felt it was our duty to get the poor fellow out of the university every once in a while. The four of us made our way over the high arch of Stonebridge, across the Omathi River, and into Imre. Autumn was in its last gasp, and I wore my cloak against the chance of a chill. My lute was slung comfortably across my back. At the heart of Imre, we crossed a great cobblestone courtyard and walked past the central fountain filled with statues of satyrs chasing nymphs. Water splashed and fanned in the breeze as we joined the line leading to the Aeolian. When we got to the door, I was surprised to see Diok wasn't there. In his place was a short, grim man with a thick neck. He held out a hand.
"That'll be a jot, young sir."
"Sorry." I moved the strap of my loot case out of the way and showed him the small set of silver pipes pinned to my cloak. I gestured to Will, Sim, and Manet. "They're with me." He squinted at the pipes suspiciously.
"You look awfully young,"
he said, his eyes darting back to my face.
"I am awfully young," I said easily. "It's part of my charm."
"Awfully young to have your pipes," he clarified.
making it a reasonably polite accusation. I hesitated. While I looked old for my age, that meant I looked a few years better than my actual 15. To the best of my knowledge, I was the youngest musician at the Aeolian. Normally this worked in my favor, as it made me a bit of a novelty. But now... Before I could think of anything to say, a voice came from the line behind us.
It's not a fake cat.
A tall woman carrying a fiddle case nodded at me.
He earned his pipes while you were away. He's the real thing.
Thanks, Marie, I said as the doorman gestured us inside. The four of us found a table near the back wall with a good view of the stage. I scanned the nearby faces and staved off a familiar flicker of disappointment when Denner was nowhere to be seen.
What was that business at the door?
Manet asked as he looked around, taking in the stage, the high vaulted ceiling.
Were people paying to get in here?
I looked at him.
You've been a student for 30 years, but never been to the Aeolian.
Well, you know,
he made a vague gesture.
I've been busy. I don't get over to this side of the river very often.
Sim laughed, sitting down.
Let me put this in terms you'll understand, Manet. If music had a university, this would be it, and Quoth would be a full-fledged arcanist.
Bad analogy, Will said. This is a musical court, and Quoth is one of the gentry. We ride his coattails in. It is the reason we have tolerated his troublesome company for so long.
A whole jot just to get in? Manet asked.
I nodded. Manet gave a non-committal grunt as he looked around, eyeing the well-dressed nobles milling on the balcony above.
Well then, he said, I guess I learned something today.
The Aeolian was just beginning to fill up, so we passed the time playing corners. It was just a friendly game, a drab a hand, double for a counterfeit, but coin poor as I was, any stakes were high. Luckily, Manet played with the precision of a gear clock, no mislaid tricks, no wild bids, no hunches. Simon bought the first round of drinks, and Manet bought the second. By the time the Aeolian's lights dimmed, Manet and I were 10 hands ahead, largely due to Simon's tendency to enthusiastically overbid. I pocketed the single copper jot with grim satisfaction. 1 talent and 4. An older man made his way up onto the stage. After a brief introduction by Stanchion, he played a heart-achingly lovely version of Titan's Late Day on mandolin. His fingers were light and quick and sure on his strings. But his voice. Most things fail with age. Our hands and backs stiffen, our eyes dim, skin roughens and our beauty fades. The only exception is the voice. Properly cared for, a voice does nothing but grow sweeter with age and constant use. His was like a sweet honey wine. He finished his song to hearty applause, and after a moment the lights came back up and the room swelled with conversation.
There's breaks between the performers, I explained to Manet, so folk can talk and walk around and get their drinks. Taelu and all his angels won't be able to keep you safe if you talk during someone's performance.
Manet huffed.
Don't worry about me embarrassing you, I'm not a complete barbarian.
Just giving fair warning, I said. You let me know what's dangerous in the artificery, I let you know what's dangerous here.
His lute was different, Willem said. It sounded different than yours, smaller too.
I fought off the urge to smile and decided not to make an issue of it.
That sort of lute is called a mandolin, I said.
You're going to play, aren't you?
Simon asked, squirming in his seat like an eager puppy.
You should play that song you wrote about Ambrose.
He hummed a bit, then sang.
A mule can learn magic. A mule has some class, because unlike young Rosie, he's just half an ass.
Manet chuckled into his mug. Willem cracked a rare smile.
No,
I said firmly. I'm done with Ambrose. We're quits as far as I'm concerned.
Of course, Will said, deadpan.
I'm serious, I said. There's no profit in it. This back and forth does nothing but irritate the masters.
Irritate is rather a mild word, Manet said dryly. Not exactly the one I would have chosen myself.
You owe him, Sim said, his eyes glittering with anger. Besides, they aren't going to charge you with conduct unbecoming a member of the Arcanum just for singing a song.
Nah, Manet said, they'll just raise his tuition.
What? Simon said. They can't do that. Tuition is based on your admissions interview.
Manet's snort echoed hollowly into his mug as he took another drink.
The interview is just a piece of the game. If you can afford it, they squeeze you a little. Same thing if you cause them trouble.
He eyed me seriously.
You're going to be getting it from both ends this time. How many times were you brought up on the horns last term?
Twice, I admitted. But the second time wasn't really my fault.
Of course,
Manet gave me a frank look. And that's why they tied you up and whipped you bloody, is it? Because it wasn't your fault. I shifted uncomfortably in my chair, feeling the pull of the half-healed scars along my back.
Most of it wasn't my fault, I amended.
Manet shrugged it aside.
Fault isn't the issue. A tree doesn't make a thunderstorm, but any fool knows where lightning's going to strike.
Willem nodded seriously.
Back home, we say the tallest nail gets hammered down first.
He frowned.
That sounds better in Siaru.
Sim looked troubled.
But the admission interview still determines the lion's share of your tuition, doesn't it?
From his tone, I guessed Sim hadn't even considered the possibility of personal grudges or politics entering into the equation.
For the most part, Manet admitted. But the masters pick their own questions, and they each get their say.
He began to tick things off on his fingers.
Heme doesn't care for you, and he can carry twice his weight in grudges. You got on Lauren's bad side early and managed to stay there. You're a troublemaker. You missed nearly a span of classes toward the end of last term. No warning beforehand or any explanation afterward.
He gave me a significant look. I looked down at the table, pointedly aware that several of the classes I'd missed had been part of my apprenticeship under Manet in the artificery. After a moment, Manet shrugged and continued.
On top of it all, they'll be testing you as a Raelar this time around. Tuitions get higher in the upper ranks. There's a reason I've stayed in Elia this long.
He gave me a hard stare.
My best guess, you'll be lucky to get out for less than 10 talents.
10 talents? Sim sucked a breath through his teeth and shook his head sympathetically.
Good thing you're so flush.
Not as flush as that, I said.
How can you not be? Sim asked. The masters fined Ambrose almost 20 talents after he broke your lute. What did you do with all the money?
I looked down and nudged my lute case gently with my foot.
You spent it on a new lute? Simon asked, horrified. 20 talents? Do you know what you could buy for that amount of money?
A lute? Willem asked.
I didn't even know you could spend that much on an instrument, Simon said.
You can spend a lot more than that, Manet said. They're like horses.
This made the conversation stumble a bit. Will and Sim turned to look at him, confused. I laughed.
It's a good comparison, actually.
Manet nodded sagely.
There's a wide spread with horses, you see. You can buy a broken old plough horse for less than a talent, or you can buy a high-stepping Volder for 40.
Not likely, Will grunted. Not for a true Volder. Manet smiled.
That's it exactly. However much you've ever known someone to spend on a horse, you could easily spend that buying yourself a fine harp or fiddle.
Simon looked stunned by this.
But my father once spent 250 hard on a Kepken tall, he said.
I leaned to one side and pointed.
The blonde man there, his mandolin, is worth twice that.
But, Simon said, but horses have bloodlines. You can breed a horse and sell it.
That mandolin has a bloodline, I said. It was made by Antressor himself. It's been around for 150 years. I watched as Sim absorbed the information, looking around at all the instruments in the room.
Still, Sim said, 20 talents.
He shook his head.
Why didn't you wait until after admissions? You could have spent whatever you had left over on the lute.
I needed it to play at Anchors, I explained. I get free room and board as their house musician. If I don't play, I can't stay. It was the truth, but it wasn't the whole truth. Anchor would have cut me some slack if I'd explained my situation. But if I'd waited, I would have had to spend almost 2 span without a lute. It would be like missing a tooth or a limb. It would be like spending two span with my mouth sewn shut. It was unthinkable.
And I didn't spend all of it on the loot, I said. I had a few other expenses crop up too.
Specifically, I'd paid off the Gaelot I'd borrowed money from. That had taken 6 talents, but being free of my debt to Devi was like having a great weight lifted off my chest. But now I could feel that same weight settling back onto me. If Manet's guess was even half accurate, I was worse off than I thought. Fortunately, the lights dimmed and the room grew quiet, saving me from having to explain myself any further. We looked up as Stanchion brought Marie up onto the stage. He chatted with the nearby audience while she tuned her fiddle, and the room began to settle down. I liked Marie. She was taller than most men, proud as a cat, and spoke at least 4 languages. Many of Imre's musicians did their best to mimic the latest fashion, hoping to blend in with the nobility, but Marie wore road clothes, pants you could do a day's work in, boots you could use to walk 20 miles. I don't mean to imply she wore homespun, mind you. She just had no love for fashion or frippery. Her clothes were obviously tailored for her, close-fitting and flattering. Tonight she wore burgundy and brown, the colors of her patron, the Lady Jael. The 4 of us eyed the stage.
I will admit, Willem said quietly, that I have given Marie a fair amount of consideration.
Manet gave a low chuckle.
That is a woman and a half, he said, which means she's 5 times more woman than any of you know what to do with.
At a different time, such a statement might have goaded the 3 of us into swaggering protest, but Manet stated it without a hint of taunt in his voice, so we let it pass, especially as it was probably true.
Not for me, Simon said. She always looks like she's getting ready to wrestle someone or go off and break a wild horse.
She does,
Manet chuckled again.
If we were living in a better age, they'd build a temple around a woman like that.
We fell silent as Marie finished tuning her fiddle and eased into a sweet roundel, slow and gentle as a soft spring breeze. Though I didn't have time to tell him, Simon was more than half right. Once, in the Flint and Thistle, I had seen Marie punch a man in the throat for referring to her as that mouthy fiddler bitch. She kicked him when he was on the ground, too, but only once, and nowhere that hurt him in a permanent way. Marie continued her roundel, the slow, sweet pace of it gradually building until it was trotting along briskly, the sort of tune you would only think of dancing to if you were exceptionally light on your feet or exceptionally drunk. She let it build until it was beyond anything a man could dream of dancing to. It was nothing like a trot now, it sprinted, fast as a pair of children racing. I marveled at how clean and clear her fingering was, despite the frantic pace. Faster, quick as a deer with a wild dog behind it. I started to get nervous, knowing it was just a matter of time before she slid or slipped or dropped a note. But somehow, she kept going, each note perfect, sharp and strong and sweet. Her flickering fingers arched high against the strings. The wrist of her bow hand hung loose and lazy, despite the terrible speed. Faster still, her face was intent, her bow arm a blur. Faster still, she braced herself, her long legs planted firmly on the stage, her fiddle tucked hard against her jaw, each note sharp as early morning birdsong. Faster still. She finished in a rush and gave a sudden, flourishing bow without a single mistake. I was sweating like a hard-run horse, my heart racing. I wasn't the only one. Will and Sim each had a sheen of sweat across their foreheads. Manet's knuckles were white where he gripped the edge of the table.
Merciful Tselu, he said breathlessly. They have music like this every night.
I smiled at him. It's still early, I said. You haven't heard me play. Willem bought the next round of drinks, and our talk turned to the idle gossip of the university. Manet had been around for longer than half of the masters, so he knew more scandalous stories than the 3 of us put together. A lutist with a thick grey beard played a stirring version of En Feant Morie. Then 2 lovely women, one in her 40s and the other young enough to be her daughter, sang a duet about Lanyel Young again I'd never heard before. Marie was called back onto the stage and played a simple jig with such enthusiasm that it set folk dancing in the spaces between the tables. Manet actually stood for the final chorus and surprised us by demonstrating a pair of remarkably light feet. We cheered him, and when he took his seat again, he was flushed and breathing hard. Will bought him a drink, and Simon turned to me with excitement in his eyes.
No, I said, I'm not going to play it, I already told you.
Sim deflated into such profound disappointment that I couldn't help but laugh.
I'll tell you what, I'll take a turn around the place. If I see Threep, I'll put him up to it.
I made my slow way through the crowded room, and while I did keep an eye out for Threep, the truth is I was hunting for dinner. I hadn't seen her come in by the front door, but with the music, cards, and general commotion, there was a chance I'd simply missed her. It took a quarter hour to methodically make my way through the crowded main floor, getting a look at all the faces and stopping to chat with a few of the musicians along the way. I made my way up to the second tier, just as the lights dimmed again. I settled in at the railing to watch an Illish piper play a sad lilting tune. When the lights came back up, I searched the second tier of the Aeolian, a wide crescent-shaped balcony. My search was more a ritual than anything. Looking for Denner was an exercise in futility, like praying for fair weather. But tonight was the exception to the rule. As I strolled through the second tier, I spotted her walking with a tall, dark-haired gentleman. I changed my path through the tables, so I would intercept them casually. Denner spotted me half a minute later. She gave a bright, excited smile and took her hand off the gentleman's arm, motioning me closer. The man at her side was proud as a hawk and handsome, with a jawline like a cinder brick. He wore a shirt of blindingly white silk and a richly dyed suede jacket the color of blood, silver stitching, silver on the buckle and the cuff. He looked every bit the Mordegan gentleman. The cost of his clothes, not even counting his rings, would have paid my tuition for a solid year. Denner was playing the part of his charming and attractive companion. In the past, I had seen her dressed much the same as myself, plain clothes meant for hard wear and travel. But tonight, she wore a long dress of green silk. Her dark hair curled artfully around her face and tumbled down her shoulders. At her throat was an emerald pendant shaped like a smooth teardrop. It matched the color of the dress so perfectly that it couldn't be coincidence. I felt a little shabby by comparison. More than a little. Every piece of clothing I owned in the world amounted to 4 shirts, 2 sets of pants, and a few sundries, all of it second-hand and threadbare to some degree. I was wearing my best tonight, but I'm sure you understand when I say my best was not particularly fine. The one exception was my cloak, Fela's gift. It was warm and wonderful, tailored for me in green and black with numerous pockets in the lining. It wasn't elegant by any measure, but it was the finest thing I owned. As I approached, Denner stepped forward and held out her hand for me to kiss, the gesture poised, almost haughty. Her expression was composed, her smile polite. To the casual observer, she looked every bit the genteel lady being gracious to a poor young musician. All except her eyes. They were dark and deep, the color of coffee and chocolate. Her eyes were dancing with amusement, full of laughter. Standing behind her, the gentleman gave a bare hint of a frown when she offered me her hand. I didn't know what game Denner was playing, but I could guess my part. So I bent over her hand, kissing it lightly in a low bow. I had been trained in courtly manners at an early age, so I knew what I was doing. Anyone can bend at the waist, but a good bow takes skill. This one was gracious and flattering, and as I pressed my lips to the back of her hand, I flared my cloak to one side with a delicate flick of my wrist. The last was the difficult bit, and it had taken me several hours of careful practice in the bathhouse mirror to get the motion to look sufficiently casual. Denner made a curtsy, as graceful as a falling leaf, and stepped back to stand beside the gentleman.
Quoth, this is Lord Kellen Vantenia. Kellen, quoth.
Kellen eyed me up and down, forming his full opinion of me more quickly than you can draw a short, sharp breath. His expression became dismissive, and he gave me a nod. I'm no stranger to disdain, but I was surprised how much this particular bit stung me.
At your service, my lord.
I made a polite bow and shifted my weight so my cloak fell away from my shoulder, displaying my talent pipes. He was about to look away with practiced disinterest when his eye snagged on the bright piece of silver. It was nothing special in terms of jewelry, but here it was significant. Willem was right. At the Aeolian, I was one of the gentry. And Kellen knew it. After a heartbeat of consideration, he returned my bow. It was barely more than a nod, really, just low enough to be polite.
Yours and your family's, he said in perfect Aturan.
His voice was deeper than mine, a warm bass, with enough of a Madigan accent to lend it a slight musical cant. Denna inclined her head in his direction.
Kellen has been showing me my way around a harp.
I am here to win my pipes, he said, his deep voice filled with certainty.
When he spoke, women at the surrounding tables turned to look in his direction with hungry, half-lidded eyes. His voice had the opposite effect on me. To be both rich and handsome was bad enough, but to have a voice like honey over warm bread on top of that was simply inexcusable. The sound of it made me feel like a cat grabbed by the tail and rubbed backward with a wet hand. I glanced at his hands.
So you're a harper?
Harpist, he corrected stiffly. I play the pendonail, king of instruments. I pulled in half a breath, then closed my mouth. The Modigan great harp had been the king of instruments 500 years ago. These days it was an antique curiosity. I let it pass, avoiding the argument for Denner's sake.
Will you be trying your luck tonight? I asked.
Kellen's eyes narrowed slightly.
There will be nothing of luck involved when I play, but no. Tonight I am enjoying my Lady Danae's company.
He lifted Denna's hand to his lips and gave it an absent-minded kiss. He looked around at the murmuring crowd in a proprietary way, as if he owned them.
I will be in worthy company here, I think.
I glanced at Denna, but she was avoiding my eyes. Her head tilted to the side as she toyed with an earring previously hidden in her hair, a tiny teardrop emerald that matched the pendant at her throat. Kellen's eyes flickered over me again. My ill-fitting clothes, my hair too short to be fashionable, too long to be anything other than wild.
And you are a piper?
The least expensive instrument.
Pipist, I said lightly. But no, I favor the lute.
His eyebrows went up.
You play court lute?
My smile stiffened a bit despite my best efforts.
Trooper's lute.
Ah! Ha ha ha! He said, laughing as if things suddenly made sense. Folk music!
I let that pass as well, though less easily than before.
Do you have seats yet? I asked brightly. Several of us have taken a table below with a good view of the stage. You're welcome to join us.
The lady and I already have a table in the third circle.
Kellen nodded in Denna's direction. I much prefer the company above. Outside his field of vision, Denna rolled her eyes at me. I kept a straight face and made another polite bow to him, barely more than a nod.
I won't delay you then.
I turned to Denna.
My lady. Might I call on you sometime?
She sighed, looking every bit the put-upon socialite, except for her eyes, which were still laughing at all the ridiculous formality of the exchange.
I'm sure you understand, Quoth. My schedule is quite full for the next several days, but you could pay a visit near the end of the span, if you wish. I've taken rooms at the Grey Man.
You're too kind, I said, and gave her a much more earnest bow than the one I had given Kellen. She rolled her eyes at me this time. Kellen held out his arm, turning his shoulder to me in the process, and the two of them walked off into the crowd. Watching them together, moving gracefully through the throng, it would be easy to believe they owned the place, or were perhaps thinking of buying it to use as a summer home. Only old nobility move with that easy arrogance, knowing deep in their guts that everything in the world exists only to make them happy. Denner was faking it marvelously. But for Lord Kellyn Brickjaw, it was as natural as drawing breath. I watched until they were halfway up the stairs to the third circle. That's where Denner stopped and put a hand to her head. Then she looked around at the floor, her expression anxious. The two of them spoke briefly, and she pointed up the stairs. Kellyn nodded and climbed out of sight. On a hunch, I looked down at the floor and spotted a gleam of silver where Denner had been standing near the railing. I moved and stood over it, forcing a pair of Kaeldish merchants to detour around me. I pretended to watch the crowd below until Denner came close and tapped me on the shoulder.
"Quoth," she said anxiously, "I'm sorry to bother you, but I seem to have lost an earring. Would you be a dear and help me look for it? I'm sure I had it on me just a moment ago."
I agreed, and soon we were enjoying a moment of privacy, decorously searching the floorboards with our heads close together. Luckily, Denner's dress was in the Madigan style, flowing and loose around the legs. If it had been slit up the side, according to the current fashion of the Commonwealth, the sight of her crouching on the floor would have been scandalous.
"God's body," I muttered. "Where did you find him?"
Denner chuckled low in her throat.
"Hush, you're the one who suggested I learn my way around a harp. Kellyn is quite a good teacher." "The Madigan pedal harp weighs 5 times as much as you do," I said. "It's a parlour instrument. You'd never be able to take one on the road."
She stopped pretending to look for her earring and gave me a pointed look.
"And who's to say I won't ever have a parlour to harp in?"
I looked back to the floor and gave as much of a shrug as I could manage.
"It's good enough for learning, I suppose. How are you liking it so far?" "It's better than the lyre," she said. "I can already see that. I can barely play Squirrel in the Thatch, though." "Is he any good?"
I gave her a sly smile.
"With his hands, I mean."
Denner flushed a bit and looked for a second as if she would swat at me. But she remembered her decorum in time and settled for narrowing her eyes instead.
"You're awful," she said. "Kellyn has been a perfect gentleman."
"Tailu, save us all from perfect gentlemen," I said. She shook her head.
"I meant it in the literal sense," she said. "He's never been out of Modeg before. He's like a kitten in a coop."
"So you're Denail now?" I asked.
"For now, and for him," she said, looking at me sideways with a small quirk of a smile. "From you, I still like Denner best."
"That's good to know," I said, then lifted my hand off the floor, revealing the smooth emerald teardrop of an earring. Denner made a show of discovering it, holding it up to catch the light.
"Ah, here we are!"
I stood and helped her to her feet. She brushed her hair back from her shoulder and leaned towards me.
"I'm all thumbs with these things," she said. "Would you mind?"
I stepped toward her and stood close as she handed me the earring. She smelled faintly of wildflowers, but beneath that she smelled like autumn leaves, like the dark smell of her own hair, like road dust in the air before a summer storm.
"So, what is he?" I said softly. "Someone's second son."
She gave a barely perceptible shake of her head, and a strand of her hair fell down to brush the back of my hand.
"He's a lord in his own right."
"Sketetereta van," I swore.
"Lock up your sons and daughters." Denna laughed again quietly. Her body shook as she fought to hold it in. "Hold still," I said as I gently took hold of her ear. Denna drew a deep breath and let it out again, composing herself. I threaded the earring through the lobe of her ear and stepped away. She lifted one hand to check it, then stepped back and gave a curtsy.
"Thank you kindly for all your help."
I bowed to her again. It wasn't as polished as the bow I'd given her before, but it was more honest.
I'm at your service, my lady.
Denner smiled warmly as she turned to go, her eyes laughing again. I finished exploring the second tier for the sake of form, but Threep didn't seem to be around. Not wanting to risk the awkwardness of a second encounter with Denner and her lordling, I decided to skip the third tier entirely. Sim had the lively look he gets around his fifth drink. Manet was slouched low in his chair, eyes half-lidded, his mug resting comfortably on the swell of his belly. Will looked the same as ever, his dark eyes unreadable.
"Threep's nowhere to be found," I said as I took my seat. "Sorry."
"Oh, that's too bad," Sim said. "Has he had any luck finding you a patron yet?"
I shook my head bitterly. "Ambrose has threatened or bribed every noble within 100 miles of here. They'll have nothing to do with me."
"Why doesn't Threep take you on himself?"
Willem asked.
"He likes you well enough."
I shook my head. "Threep's already supporting 3 other musicians. 4, really, but 2 of them are a married couple."
4?
Sim said, horrified.
"It's a wonder he can still afford to eat."
Will cocked his head curiously, and Sim leaned forward to explain.
"Threep's a count, but his holdings aren't really that extensive. Supporting 4 players on his income is a little extravagant."
Will frowned.
"Drinks and strings can't amount to much."
"A patron's responsible for more than that,"
Sim began to count items off on his fingers.
"There's the writ of patronage itself, then he provides room and board for his players, a yearly wage, a suit of clothes in his family's colours."
2 suits of clothing, traditionally, I interjected.
"Every year."
Growing up in the troop, I never appreciated the livery Lord Greyfellow had given us, but these days I couldn't help but imagine how much my wardrobe would be improved by 2 new sets of clothing. Simon grinned as a serving boy arrived, leaving no doubt as to who was responsible for the glasses of blackberry brand set in front of each of us. Sim raised his glass in a silent toast and drank a solid swallow. I raised my glass in return, as did Willem, though it obviously pained him. Manet remained motionless, and I began to suspect he had dozed off.
"It still doesn't add square," Willem said, setting down his brand. "All the patron gets is lighter pockets."
"The patron gets a reputation," I explained. "That's why the players wear the livery. Plus, he has entertainers at his beck and call, parties, dances, pageants. Sometimes they'll write songs or plays at his request." Will still seemed skeptical.
"Still seems like the patron is getting the short side of it."
"That's because you only have half the picture," Manet said, pulling himself upright in his chair. "You're a city boy. You don't know what it's like growing up in a little town built on one man's land." "Here's Lord Ponsington's lens," Manet said, using a bit of spilled beer to draw a circle in the center of the table. "Where you live like the good little commoner you are."
Manet picked up Simon's empty glass and put it inside the circle.
"One day, a fella strolls through town wearing Lord Ponsington's colours."
Manet picked up his full glass of brand and jigged it across the table until it stood next to Sim's empty one inside the circle.
"And this fellow plays songs for everyone at the local inn."
Manet splashed some of the brand into Sim's glass. Not needing any prompting, Sim grinned and drank it. Manet trotted his glass around the table and entered the circle again.
"Next month, a couple more folk come through wearing his colours and put on a puppet show."
He poured more brand and Simon tossed it back.
"The next month there's a play."
Again. Now Manet picked up his wooden mug and clomped it across the table into the circle.
"Then the taxman shows up wearing the same colours."
Manet knocked his empty mug impatiently on the table. Sim sat confused for a second. Then he picked up his own mug and sloshed some beer into it. Manet eyed him and tapped the mug again sternly. Sim poured the rest of his beer into Manet's mug, laughing.
"I like blackberry brand better anyway."
"Lord Ponsington likes his taxes better," Manet said. "And people like to be entertained, and the taxman likes not being poisoned and buried in a shallow grave behind the old mill."
He took a drink of beer.
"So it works out nicely for everyone."
Will watched the exchange with his serious dark eyes.
"That makes better sense,"
It's not always as mercenary as that, I said. Threep genuinely wants to help musicians improve their craft. Some nobles treat their performers like horses in a stable, I sighed. Even that would be better than what I have now, which is nothing.
Don't sell yourself cheap, Sim said cheerfully. Wait and get a good patron, you deserve it. You're as good as any musician here.
I kept silent, too proud to tell them the truth. I was poor in a way the rest of them could hardly understand. Sim was a Turan nobility, and Will's family were wool merchants from Raelian. They thought being poor meant not having enough money to go drinking as often as they liked. With tuition looming, I didn't dare spend a bent penny. I couldn't buy candles or ink or paper. I had no jewelry to pawn, no allowance, no parents to write home to. No respectable moneylender would give me a thin shim. Hardly surprising, as I was a rootless orphan Adama Roo whose possessions would fit into a burlap sack. It wouldn't have to be a large sack either. I got to my feet before the conversation had a chance to wander into uncomfortable territory. It's time I made some music. I picked up my loot case and made my way to where Stanchion sat at the corner of the bar.
What have you got for us tonight?
He asked, running his hand over his beard. A surprise. Stanchion paused in the act of getting off his stool.
Is this the sort of surprise that's going to cause a riot or make folk set my place on fire?
He asked. I shook my head, smiling.
Good.
He smiled and headed off in the direction of the stage.
In that case, I like surprises.